Hello and welcome to a brand new episode of Callin' It. I'm Alex Barth, as always joined by Alex Lebowitz, powered by CLNS Media, recording Tuesday, January 12th, just before the bottom of the 1 o'clock hour here in Boston. Lebowitz, what's going on?
Not much, just same old stuff, different day, but no complaints other than that. How are you doing?
I'm doing it. It's weird, you know, you come off. For me, it's always weird the first couple of days after NFL season because I'm, you know, go. And even the week after the team is done, there's a lot of like postseason stuff, whatever. Mm-hmm. And then it just kind of flatlines and like all day on Monday, because the weekend was fine. I was watching games on Monday. I should be doing something. What am I doing? I'm missing something. I should be doing something right now. So I'm kind of, and it's also way earlier in the year than I'm used to being done with football season. So I'm very much like kind of lost, but I think I found my footing, and we will talk a little bit of football on this podcast. So maybe that helps me keep my balance a little bit. We're also going to get into the NBA, and they have a pretty big problem going on right now as it goes with COVID. So we'll talk about that. We are going to get into MLB free agency, or the lack of MLB free agency, as it were, a little later on in the show. But we're going to start with the NFL. We're going to start with wild card weekend, super wild card weekend. I'm going to start with my hot take from the weekend. I didn't think this was a hot take, but based on the reaction from Twitter, it was a hot take. And we're going to get into all of the football, but I just want to say this. I think the Nickelodeon broadcast was a really good idea. I think it's a great way to get kids in. I think it's a great way to grow the game. I had zero interest in watching it.
Mm-hmm.
I think Romo does a great job of explaining the game. I am into the intricacies. I don't necessarily need the game spoon-fed to me. I saw the clips on Twitter. It certainly seemed like fun. I just wanted to enjoy the game. I didn't need all the extra. Look, I barely like the green zone graphic NBC does on third downs. I can barely stand that. So apparently that was a hot take. I don't know. I think it's a really good idea. I think baseball should be kicking themselves for not doing that, right? It seems like such a no-brainer for baseball. I had no interest in it.
I agree 100%. I think it's something that is innovative. If you're a marketer for the NFL, it is a phenomenal idea to at least try. It's not like you're spending a boatload of money on that sort of broadcast.
And no knock to anybody who watched it either. Like, I definitely see the appeal in it.
I mean, I'm going to knock people who watched it too. That's my whole thing.
You are going to knock
children.
People who watched it?
100%. I think that, I think, it annoyed me. I'm not going to knock people who watched it who aren't that big of football fans. But if you are a football fan, there was just a lot of stuff in there. Just like, yeah, I know. And like, why are you bringing up Cardi B three times in a game? It's just trying to force the entertainment aspect into a broadcast that isn't necessary for adults. For kids, it's fine. But if you're a grown person who is a football fan and you're watching that instead of the CBS broadcast, I don't know what the hell's the matter with you. I think you need to get checked out by a psychiatrist. I just found it incredibly annoying for an adult. For a kid, it's fine. Also, I don't know about you,
if you're an adult with kids and you're trying to get them hooked on football, that's a very good way to do it. It's kind of like the halftime show, right? The halftime show, the acts are never the acts you would expect for a mm-hmm. football fan audience, but that's the whole point. Mm-hmm. They're trying to draw from they're trying to draw from outside of that audience. That game wasn't marketed to you and me. Maybe some football fans watched it. You know what? If you wanted something different, and let's be honest here, that was far and away, and we knew this going in, the worst game of the weekend.
Oh, yeah.
They had done that, you know, if they had done that with the Bills-Colts game, I might have been more annoyed. But you have the Saints, who are in the playoffs every year, up against a Bears team that absolutely shouldn't be there. The best part of the whole thing was Mitchell Trubisky winning the MVP, which was
that was
objectively hilarious. Yeah. Like, I'll give him that. They gave me something to follow with that game. I was kind of planning on watching the first half of that game, because now Wild Card Weekend's different, right? It's all day. You don't have that extra window. I was like, all right, it'll be a blowout by halftime. I'll get all my errands done. I'll make dinner in the second half. The Bears kind of let the Saints hang around a little bit. Like, they did and they didn't, right? It felt like...
I mean, the Saints let the Bears hang around.
The Saints let the Bears hang around. It felt like they did and they didn't. Like, on the scoreboard, they were letting them hang around. It was, I think, 7-3, 10-3 at half. But mm-hmm. you never actually felt like the Bears were going to catch them. The score was close on paper, but that game never actually felt close.
Yeah, it was just a dud. It was just a dud of the game, but probably the worst game of the weekend. It's just one of those things. You have Mitch Trubisky on the other side, and I know he was the MVP, but he's not somebody who's going to win you football games late in a game. And scoring only 9 points just isn't going to get it done. So it's nice to see. I like the matchup that we had next week. Obviously, Breeze, Brady. The Saints have beat the Bucs twice this year already. It's tough to beat a team three times in one season. We know that. But overall, I think this is back to the main point. This was the game that you'd want to experiment on
juice it up
on Nickelodeon. Or as Mad Dog Russo calls it, Nickeldonian. So if you haven't seen that clip, I highly recommend it. It's hilarious. This was kind of a garbage game. It's what you'd expect. And it obviously gives you a favorable matchup next week from a fan's perspective.
And we'll get into those in a little bit. I want to know what did you think was the best game of the weekend?
The best game of the weekend. I mean, you have to go Colts Bills was probably the best game of the weekend. I think most people anticipated that, you know, to be the best game, that or Ravens Titans.
I'd go Ravens Titans.
I like that Colts Bills game. I think it was close down to the wire pretty much. And two high-powered offenses eyed the over, and it barely hit the over. So from a gambler perspective, awesome.
And a little adrenaline rush there for you.
And you also have the Phillip Rivers aspect, and I think that's sure. A big thing this week in general. You have Big Ben, you have Phillip Rivers, you have Drew Brees, all people who, you know, we're unsure what their future is in the NFL, if they're going to retire, if they're going to come back. We don't know. So I think all those storylines, and obviously the Bills, who haven't really gotten over that hump, and I know last week they made it to the second round, but they still have something to prove. You wanted to see what they could do. And although Josh Allen made a couple mistakes, taking some big sacks and fumbling and whatnot, they pulled it out, and I thought it was a good way to start wild card weekend.
Well, you know what? I am going to retract what I just said about Titans-Ravens, because I did like that game up until Vrabel ruined it with the punt, and it was a stupid, stupid, stupid punt. And there was a lot of bad coaching this weekend. I don't know what was worse, the coaching or the officials. We'll get into that in a sec. The best game of the weekend was, as I said it would be, by the way, on the show last week, Washington-Tampa. Mm. And how about Taylor Heinicke, huh? Look, I don't think that's who he is. I think he played the best game of his life at the best possible time. I think an NFL team is going to give him a boatload of money, and it's going to turn out horribly, right? He's like Matt a worse Flynn. Version of Case Keenum. But Matt Flynn's another one. There you go. But that was, oh, my God, that was so much fun to watch. You know, as a Tom Brady fanboy, I was actually rooting for Heinicke. I really was. I wanted to see him win that.
Wow.
Because that was, I mean, this is not only was it just this great story, but you could tell how much fun he was having and how much fun his teammates were having watching him put on that performance, right? He scores that incredible diving rushing touchdown, pops right up. You get the huge fist bump. Chase Young runs over from the sideline. He's pointing at the back of his jersey. I mean, that's it. That's playoff football right there. Just some guys out there having a good time. That was great. That was awesome. That, to me, I think I had more fun. I don't know that it was the best game because it got sloppy at times for both teams. Like, it wasn't the most technically sound game. I probably had more fun watching that game than any of the other games this weekend, I think.
And I think that's going to be the case. I mean, it was a fun game. You had, obviously, Tom Brady. If you're in New England, you're going to be watching that game. Maybe you don't root for him, but you're watching it. You're interested. And then you have the XFL guy, who I know is someone who's going to resonate with you. And the fact that he played the way he did, it was awesome. It's a good story.
He was some throws.
He's making plays in general on the ground, through the air. He was doing it all, and you could tell that Redskins team was feeding off of that energy. I know that's cliche to say, but it's the truth when you have, you know, a guy who was probably your third or fourth quarterback coming in and starting a playoff game and fighting like he did for that team. So that was a good game. I love to watch it and obviously Tom Brady continued to do what he does. It's just the type of thing where you don't even mention it anymore. But, you know, that was the most yards that Redskins defense has given up through the air all season long. And it's good to see a guy like Mike Evans for the Bucs' sake come back and healthy and contribute like he did as well. And again, looking forward to next week's matchup. I think that's going to be the game of the week next weekend. So it'll be a good one.
So we had the one blowout, right, the Chicago game against the Saints. We had the three close games there, the three fun games we just talked about. And then there were, how do I want to put this? Okay. So Seattle loses to the Rams on Saturday, right?
Mm.
And I called that one of the most embarrassing playoff losses I'd ever seen. And I stand by that. It was because
until you saw something else.
Yeah. Well, let me just lay out, you know, okay. The Rams were on their third string quarterback. Aaron Donald left that game early. They had a number of other key injuries. Seattle's at home. They've been an offensive wagon all year. They got nervous. They started forcing plays. Like the Seahawks had every reason to win that game, and they just didn't. So I came away from that thinking, man, what an embarrassing loss. That one's going to hang around for a while. And then Pittsburgh happened. Oh, my God. Against a team with no coach, missing half their roster. They haven't practiced all week. You're at home where you are 44-9 against them since the merger. You have a better team. You are playing for your captain and Marquise Pouncey, who we now know and the team knew going in it was going to be his last NFL game. You might be playing for Big Ben for his last game. You were 11-0. You talked about being a team of destiny. Okay, you, it wasn't the fans. You were the ones talking about 16-0. And you come out, and look, it's one thing to lose a close divisional football game. That always happens. But a 28-point spot in the first quarter, a 7-point spot in the first 10 seconds. My God, that's the Pittsburgh Steelers. Okay, that is as blue blood gets in the NFL. They are, you know, the Cowboys are America's team. The Patriots are the Patriots. The Raiders, whatever. The Pittsburgh Steelers are the poster child of the NFL. Yet that was a franchise-defining loss. That team has 6 Super Bowls. And I'm not saying the definitive moment. But that is going to shape the way the Pittsburgh Steelers are viewed for years, that loss. Especially if that's it. If they lose Pouncey now and Ben regresses and they lose Juju and they lose Bud Dupree and they go into a rebuild here and they're a 6-9 win team for the next 4 or 5 years. And that really was the end of the window. That is going to be a defining loss for a long time for the Pittsburgh Steelers. If they actually fired their coaches, which they're too holier than thou to do, I would say Tomlin should be in consideration. I gained a lot of respect for Mike Tomlin over the last 2 years, kind of, knowing what we know now about Le'Veon Bell and Antonio Brown and how he kept those guys under check. But my goodness, what a pathetic, embarrassing, sad loss.
Yeah, it was, and looking at the season as a whole, I mean, to come out and play like that, that quick turnover, fumble return for a touchdown, turn the ball over again, and just it just seemed like Murphy's Law of a game for the Steelers. Everything that could go wrong did. And somehow they got it within 12 points, which was shocking. Right. I thought there was a chance they could kind of mount a comeback. Obviously, that didn't happen. But they started the season 11-0, right? It was 11-0. Finished the season 12-4, first round exit. That remind you of anyone?
It's Patriots.
It's Joe Geisa. I saw tweet something out, and he was like, this is pretty much just what happened to the Patriots last year, which is spot on. I mean, they just fell apart. And you look at a guy like Ben Roethlisberger, who has regressed over the past couple of years, 38 years old, probably, I mean, it should be his last game. It's not like he was 30, like when he was 35 saying, well, yeah, maybe I don't. But
here's the thing.
Yeah.
He has a $41 million cap hit next year.
Yeah.
So, and I think even if he retires, I think that's still like $24 million. The team might not let him retire.
I mean, possibly.
Look at the Patriots. They had what was it, $12 million tied up in Brady, and they couldn't build a team because of that. Roethlisberger is going to be at least double that, if not, you know, 4 times that. He might have to play next year, whether he's good or not.
Yeah, there's no way you move that contract. That's for sure. So you have dead money, at least $20 million, if that's the case. Even if he retires. That's a problem. And you can't blame them for being in that position, just like you didn't blame the Patriots for doing it. I mean, they have a roster they had a roster that you could – it's still a really good roster. It's still a win now type of roster. They just stunk this year. And you mentioned Mike Tomlin. I think a lot of it can point back to Mike Tomlin. And although I think he's a great football mind, a really good coach, sometimes coaches' tenures just – coaches outlast their welcome, or their message is lost. It happens all the time. And that might be the case with Mike Tomlin. But one thing's for sure – it's extremely uncertain what's going to happen to the Steelers moving forward. You talk about a defining moment. I don't know if I'd go that far. You think, you know, Roethlisberger winning two Super Bowls within the first few years of his career, they would, you know, be in a better position right now in 2021. That's not the case. So I think it's fair to bring up the discussion that this was an extremely underwhelming run for Ben Roethlisberger, especially when he had the support he did, when that team had the talent that it did. But to bring it back to the Buccaneers, or not the Buccaneers, the Browns rather, you got to be happy for them. They played well. They came ready to play despite, you know, facing adversity coming into this week, not practicing until, what was it, Friday, having their head coach with COVID. And then they've obviously been dealt this hand previously this season. That was a statement win for them, and I don't know if they're going into next week and they're going to have a real shot at advancing to the conference championship, but overall, I think we're just shocked, and I think that this is atypical of a Steelers team to an extent, and atypical of a Browns team. So I guess it's a changing of guards, and we'll see what happens during the offseason, but there's definitely a lot of question marks with that Pittsburgh roster.
Yeah, I don't feel happy for the Browns. I don't. I'm not into the cute NFL stories. That's not for me.
You don't like the
Browns, the Bills. No.
I hate Ledwitz, the Bills fans.
Ledwitz, I haven't been to a bar in 10 months. I haven't been, I've barely been out of my house in the last 10 months, okay? I haven't been to a sporting event outside of, you know, empty stadiums for work. I need some sense of normalcy in my life. The Browns and Bills being good might be my breaking point. That might be it. Like, I have no time for the Buccaneers one's a little different. I know people have put them in because they've also had this historic playoff drought. They just added Tom Brady. This wasn't like a natural rebuilding growth. That's its own category. And I don't want the Bucs to win a Super Bowl because I don't want Brady to have any seminal moments there. I want it to be Michael Jordan with the Wizards. Let him have all the individual success he wants. No team success. No, I don't want to see a picture of him upon his retirement with one ring that's pewter and gold. I want them all to be red, white, and blue. But I have no love for the cutesy NFL stories this year. I have no love for the Bills and the Browns. Like you mentioned, the Bills fans are intolerable. I don't really know any Browns fans, but let the losers be the losers. Well, I don't have that in me right now. Then again, I rooted against the Cubs. Wow. I think part of what makes some of these sports stories so great is the chase, okay? There's a very real argument that the Red Sox as they existed, the culture that is the Boston Red Sox, not the team itself, the culture that is the Boston Red Sox was ruined by that team winning in 04. I think there's something to that. Maybe not just 04, maybe a culmination of four titles in 13 years, but it's very, very different. Well, that fan base lost its edge, right? Is Bills Mafia the same thing if they get a title? It's not. Is the dog pound the same thing if they get a title? It's not. You're not going to see people jumping through tables. You're not going to see any of that because the tickets go up to this ridiculous price that nobody can afford. And it becomes all about the bandwagon. And it becomes all about, you know, it becomes an event. It's not about the team. It's all these corporations buying tickets to take clients. And it just becomes essentially a club, right? We saw it in Golden State in the NBA. We started to see it with the Dodgers before the pandemic. I will tell you this right now. Bills Mafia thinks they won a Super Bowl. Winning a Super Bowl kills Bills Mafia. The jumping through tables, the Zumba pants, that all goes away because all those people get priced out by the fancy schmancy bandwagoners who all of a sudden going to Buffalo for a game is the it thing. That's what's going to happen. So maybe that's me justifying being a curmudgeon. Maybe that's me justifying being a bitter old man that my team isn't good anymore and I don't want these teams to win. But yeah, I don't want the Bills to win a Super Bowl. I don't want the Browns to win a Super Bowl. It's more fun watching them chase. Give me the Saints. Give me, hell, I would take the Steelers, and I don't like the Steelers. Give me the Steelers. The Colts would have been interesting just because of Rivers. I don't want the Browns. I don't want the Bills. I don't. There you go.
I see the Bills. I get that's a division rival. You know, it's a team.
Yeah, I guess there is logic for the Bills one.
There's more logic for that one. And we also, you and I both went to college in Western New York, which is, you know, a lot of Buffalo area people attend that school. We know a bunch of people who are fans of that team, which causes me to not like them even more. The Browns are different. I think the Browns have, because there is truth to the lovable loser type of thing that existed with Cubs fans prior to, what was it, 2016. It existed with Red Sox fans prior to 2004.
Is there any interest in the Cubs right now?
No.
Right.
No, definitely not.
Who cares? They won the championship. They suddenly became I think the White Sox are more relevant than the Cubs right now.
Yeah.
Like, that's the thing. If the Browns win it, the whole thing, they're not the Browns anymore if they win. They're just a football team from Cleveland.
I think they're still the Browns. I think that it's a fan base that's earned that. You know, the people who've stuck with that team, that's what fandom's about. You stick with the team in the desperate hopes of winning a championship, of crossing that line. And when they do, like, you got to be somewhat happy for them to an extent. The Bills, no.
I won't be happy for the Bills. The Browns fans, I get that. I'm not rooting for it, but I'll be happy for them.
But I won't be happy
for the Bills fans.
One more point you made. The Steelers' demise is something to look forward to as well. So if you're talking about the changing that's guards one way, the Steelers, you know, falling apart, that's a good thing, because not only have they been one of the better teams in the NFL over the past 15 years, historically speaking, they're one of the best teams of all time. So when you see them knock down a peg, that's nice. And they've been a rival of the Patriots in the past as well. So obviously, I don't want the Browns. I don't want the Bills to win. I don't want the Ravens to win either.
Chiefs, I don't really want any of the remaining. I mean, I'll take the Chiefs at this point, but I have no interest in any of the remaining AFC teams. I was into the Titans. I was into the Colts. That's it.
Yeah. And you know what?
I'll say this, because to the point you brought up about the Steelers, and I can accept a good team being bad, a traditionally good team being bad, more than a traditionally bad team being good, because, and you know what? I'm outing myself here as a bitter old man. What does misery love, Alex Leibowitz?
It loves company.
Misery loves company. My team's not in it. I'm miserable. Everybody else should have to be miserable. That's just the way it is. Like, and maybe that's why I'm okay with the Chiefs, because they're not going to be miserable. Like, that's just not realistic with that quarterback. There's not going to be a lot of football misery in Kansas City for the next decade.
It's not quite a decade, but with
the Packers. What?
It's the hope factor. You want them to stink, and you can't will the Chiefs into stinking, but right. you might be able to will the Bills and the Browns into stinking. So, you know,
right. I think that's a pretty accurate assessment. Misery loves company. As a human being, I generally don't believe that. I want people to be happy. As a sports fan, Just purely based on sports, misery loves company. If my team's bad, your team has to be bad too. If my team's good, your team should be bad. But if my team's bad, your team definitely has to be bad.
And I think the question is, what's going to be the most insufferable fan base that's successful?
Buffalo.
And it's Buffalo.
It's not
it's
even
Buffalo.
Close.
Yeah.
It's going to be Buffalo. It's because we tortured those people. We in New England tortured those people for 20 years.
And
they deserved it. But we tortured them.
And that's where I'm 100% with you, by the way. My biggest pet peeve over the last few weeks has been the growing popularity in the Boston area that, you know, people want the Bills to do well. They want them to win. I hate that. That's not what this is about. Screw the Bills. They have a talented team. I don't hate anyone on their roster specifically, but that's a division rival that's, you know, the Patriots have dominated for decades. And you know that their fans are insufferable. And every single year, I think this is the main crux of it beyond the division thing. Every single year, Bills fans are delusional that they're going to win the division. Every year, it seems like that's the case. I don't want their delusion to be verified. I don't want it to be validated, rather. And if they were to win in the Super Bowl or make it even, it would be verified or validated, rather. And that's just something I don't think I'll be able to tolerate all that well.
That's one more football point before we move on, because we're going long here on the football. But I wanted to ask you this, and I thought that this was an interesting one. Who had a worse weekend? Because I was going back and forth on this all weekend. Who had a worse weekend? NFL coaches, NFL head coaches, or NFL officials?
That's a tough one. I feel like they both lose every weekend. Like they're
no, but this weekend was, I mean, how many reviews did we get this weekend of just obvious plays? Some of the games dragged because of ticky-tack penalty calls. But at the same time, it was Puntapalooza.
Yeah.
Fourth and one down 10 with 2 minutes to go. And I'm exaggerating here, but not that much. Fourth and one down 10 with 2 minutes to go from your opponent's 35-yard line. Punt it. Punt it, Mike Vrabel. Punt it, Mike Tomlin. Punt it. Punt it. Just give it away.
Yeah.
We don't want to win the game. More games were lost this weekend than were won. And in saying that, what I mean, the Colts lost that game. The Bills didn't win it. The Steelers absolutely lost that game more than the Browns won it. The Seahawks lost their game more than the Rams won it. I would say the Saints, I think, won their game. I would say Tampa, I think, won their game. I think that's it. I think that's it. I think the other four games were more losses than wins.
I will say this. I mean, there's a serious problem with reviewing, with film, with going to the booth in the NFL. When you have these plays that are – it just seems evident. It's like if the guy's knees off the ground, it doesn't matter if it's 2 inches or 2 feet. You can still see a gap there. You can still make a judgment. And you know, the call stands thing is such a cop-out because you don't want to do anything that's going to be controversial. And I think that's what it comes down to. It's not about making the right call. It's about making the call that won't, you know, cause a stir. But, you know, ironically, that's exactly what it does. So I just don't get the purpose of having, you know, these challenges and these booth reviews if it's not going to change anything. If it's just going to – if it needs to be – as clear as day, because the only thing that those reviews are really for is overturning extremely egregious calls that are so clearly wrong. But
except
if it's
for that one pass interference call.
Yes. Yeah. And then you have the, you know, obviously the ones that are just flat out wrong, even in reviews, but you know, the play stands. I really think that half of, you know, the plays that stand should be overturned. And the fact that they aren't, it just proves how flawed a process challenging is in the NFL.
All right. I mean, you have the clock there. How long did we just do on the NFL?
We did about 26, 27 minutes.
All right, that's like a whole show. Let's move on. NBA, they have a big COVID problem. I think, is this our third? Because we've had this discussion a few times, right? I feel like this has to be the third time we've had this discussion about a league on the brink of what are they going to do, COVID, blah, blah, blah. I know we had it with baseball, with the Marlins back in July, right? We must have had it with the Patriots, right? I think so. Yeah?
Sorry, my mic was muted. Yes, I believe we have had that with the Patriots. We must have from early in the season.
So I guess hockey has it figured out. But here we go. NBA. Massive COVID problems, games getting canned left and right. Teams don't have the required number, the minimum number of players required to play games, which why the roster wasn't expanded before the season, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of seems like an easy fix right now.
Yeah.
They did schedule. So this is what here's the pros and cons of what the NBA did, because I actually think they did some good things to prepare for this, and I think they made some crucial mistakes. The one big thing they did, there's two things. One, they are being somewhat cautious with it in that, you know, I think the NFL would just force teams to play with not enough players. I do. I think baseball might, but baseball kind of did. Basketball.
Well, the NBA kind of did last week, like one or two games. There was the game, was it Seth Curry who tested positive?
Philadelphia had to play seven players for the most part. The big pro, though, I thought this was smart. They only scheduled the first half of their schedule. They left the back half open so that they can reschedule games and they're not cramming things in. So I thought that was smart. I thought that was being well prepared. The flip side of that, and as I'm saying this, breaking news on a pre-recorded podcast, Celtics Wednesday night game is being postponed per Woj, third straight Celtics game that'll be postponed. The negative is, okay, so you have the 8-player minimum, which makes sense. You don't want to run guys into the ground, especially when you're playing every other night. why was there not a roster expansion? Just two or three extra players, do it like football. You can have 20 players on your roster, but only 15 can be active per night, or whatever it is, 13 per night, whatever it is, right? Taxi squad, like the NHL is doing, set something up. And they didn't do that, and they're in trouble now. And, I mean, we're beating a dead horse at this point. Like I said, we've had this conversation twice before. Maybe the third time is the charm. All conventional logic tells you shut down. They can't contain the virus. It's a problem. You know, have reports of guys getting the virus a second time. So it's not, you're not going to get herd immunity within the NBA. Like, that apparently is not an option. They should pause the league for 2 weeks and figure this out. They need to consider a bubble, yada, yada, yada. Go back and listen to our show from July when we were talking about this in regards to baseball. We're about to make all the same points. But much like happened in July, they're probably just going to power through. There's no reason to think they won't. It's what every other league has done.
Well, it's also so just, it's just so difficult to really control this to the extent that they'd want to. You're not in a bubble. Players are free to do what they want. They're free to hang out with who they want. Even if there's protocol to follow, there's no assurance that they're going to follow it to a T. So and you also have employees in these venues who are coming in and out and aren't, you know, obligated to abide by the same rules outside of their job as the players on these teams. So there's no set way to really deal with this. It's just something that it's going to happen, and you're going to have to find a way to manage. And the problem is, you know, these guys are playing athletics together. So spreading in these locker rooms, it's a problem, and it's going to continue to be a problem. But I think you make a great point. Leaving the last half of the season open is a phenomenal idea, because it accounts for any of these postponed games, any of these cancellations. They can make them up at a later date, which is smart. And I think the NBA is starting to get, you know, get things together in regard to not forcing teams to go out there. But yeah, there's a lot of just common sense things that could have been done prior to the year that weren't, for whatever reason. And the taxi squad thing seems like the most sensible. But maybe they don't want that. You know, when you have Jason Tatum who gets COVID, and, you know, Jaylen Brown might be exposed. So there you go. Two of the top young guys, not only, you know, obviously on that team and in the league, are out. That's not a great product for the NBA. So maybe they don't want to incentivize that. Maybe they're leaning into the, you know, let's just hold this off for later in the year so that we can, you know, reap the ratings then, instead of having to deal with this dud of a game between the Celtics and the Magic, in which none of the big players are participating. We've seen that happen in non-COVID years. So but overall, this is just something that's going to have to happen. It's something that they're going to have to manage, and there's not going to be a set way to combat this issue 100%. Now they're trying to implement stricter guidelines. I think that's probably the only thing you could really do. Just try to control what you can. But overall, players are going to do what they want, and you're never going to have no players in the NBA that are infected when you're not in a bubble. Just a reality.
I mean, they got to figure something out, because what you're going to have right now is just constant back-to-backs in the second half of the year for some teams. And I mean, that's just going to be brutal, right? If you think about a team like the Celtics, especially, where one of their best players in Kemba Walker can't play back-to-backs. And Tristan Thompson, who's a key piece too, might not be able to play back-to-backs. And so that team's going to have to go down the stretch like that. This rest now is not really going to mean anything. You'd like to see them. I get, and again, I complimented them, and I do think it was smart to not schedule that second half of the year. I do. I think that was smart. But you would have liked to see them leave another window for a pause if they have to do it. The problem is, and this is why the NFL didn't pause, you really can only do it once. And maybe the NBA thinks things will get worse. The other thing with the NFL is, like, the NFL, it's a little apples to oranges, right? The better comp is hockey or baseball. Oh, baseball is its own animal, because that's every night. The NBA is basically every night right now. But, you know, the NFL is different because the schedule is so rigid.
Yeah.
Right. You only play one day a week. You have so few games. You'd like to think basketball could pause, but, you know, just doesn't seem possible right now. All right.
Maybe it gets to that point where it's like, all right, we need a 2-week break and we need to quarantine every player. And
but
every
I'm
coach.
Saying, like, what's getting to that point? Are we not at that point right now?
Yeah,
it might be. And I know it can, but can it get worse than this?
Yeah, I think the one way it gets worse, and this is morbid, but if like a coach, if like an elderly coach gets it, or staff member, that's not like if Greg Popovich were to get this thing, that would be bad. And anyone having a serious illness, God forbid, would be horrible for the league. And then
if you wait until that happens to pause, like you can't pause after something massive like that. The whole point of the pause at that point, it makes absolutely no sense to pause, right? Because the worst has already happened,
mm-hmm.
right? You don't, you know, if you're in a car and the car in front of you hits his brakes, you don't wait to hit your brakes until you hit the car in front of you. At that point, the brakes don't really help. The whole point of the brakes, you know, when is it too late to hit the brakes? It's definitely too late once you've already hit the car. There's also a period where it's too late before you've hit the car. Mm-hmm. But there is a period where you can hit the brakes and you might shred your brakes. You might shred your tires. You know, you're definitely going to do some damage, but you can avoid catastrophe. That's where the NBA is right now. Like, how much more room do they have to hit the brakes before they can't, before it's irrelevant, before it doesn't matter?
And the one solution is vaccination. And, you know, that's obviously not something that is really in the NBA's control right now, that they're going to have to wait for it. But
yeah, you can't jump the line if you're one of these leagues. There's no coming back from that.
The only thing
NHL hasn't, just given their kind of history of being obtuse, but mm-hmm. you can't do that.
Yeah, it's not going to happen. Maybe like you can probably get it to guys like Greg Popovich who are over 65, right, which should be the priority right now. And hopefully that happens to avoid, you know, someone who may be at risk, you know, contracting this virus.
All right. Because we are up against it here, I wanted to do a full conversation on this, but I do want to touch on MLB free agency a little bit. So this might just become a weekly segment on the show. We're going to do the Lebowitz Kyrie Irving minute. I'm just going to kind of mute my mic and go ahead.
All right. Kyrie Irving, a video surfaced the other day of him at a birthday party for his dad and sister, who are, I think their birthdays are one day apart. And it wasn't from, you know, a couple years ago. It was from this past week. And if you know anything about Kyrie Irving's situation, he has refused to play over the past three or four games, citing personal reasons without giving anyone in the media or even on his coaching staff a heads up for what that reason really is. At least it's not publicized right now. You have Kevin Durant defending him. You have certain Nets fans defending him for some reason. And he's been caught as a more of a phony than we initially had thought. And I guess my question is, when do you give up on him if you are still on the Kyrie Irving boat? The guy continues to make a mockery of himself, the most pretentious athlete in all of sports. And again, being caught in a compromised situation in which we all know he's not going to accept any responsibility for. Now he's going to have to quarantine to come back because he was at a maskless event with over 10 people, I believe. And this is after he's already refused to play for no legitimate reason. So I don't know. I think the Nets maybe should start thinking about moving on without Kyrie being a part of this season, because the reality is they have a good roster as is. I don't even think they need him, but it's typical of the guy. And there's not a ton more you can say other than, you know, this is just a little update as to, you know, into Kyrie's life and another example as to why he is the most insufferable athlete on the planet.
And we'll see that the team doesn't expect him back per the latest report. Like you said, when he comes back, he will likely have to quarantine. So we'll see what happens. You wonder at what point the guy just decides he doesn't want to play anymore. He made a comment when he first came to Boston. He didn't want to play in the NBA beyond the age of 31. So, you know, we know early retirement is something he's thought about. And if the guy doesn't love the game anymore, he doesn't love the game. I don't think anybody's going to fault him. Well, you'll fault him for that. But if he steps away, he steps away.
I'm sick of the ambiguous, just like veiled, him just not communicating. And beginning of the year, it all started, the shitstorm, with him being like, I'm not talking to the media. I'm not one of your pawns. Yada, yada, yada. It's like, dude, you make $35 million a year. It's a part of your job. I'm sick of, you know, the victimization of NBA athletes in regard to, you know, being asked to you know, go out and play, number one, and go out and do their obligation and talk to the media. Like, it's, you get paid a very handsome salary. No one gets to take this amount of time off for work and any other occupation. I get that people have patience with you because you're such a talented player, but you just need to get your act together. And if you don't want to play, fine. I would prefer him to just come out and say, I'm done. Than him to just leave his coworkers and teammates out to dry. It's disrespectful. And you know, that line of like, well, he probably has some mental health problems. It only goes so far, and you still need to communicate. And maybe the issue is there are too many people enabling him in his circle, which is also a problem that should be addressed. But I'm sick of people trying to, you know, qualify his issues with like, oh, well, you know, this is happening and, you know, he's right about that. Like, I don't care. I don't care. The guy does not deserve the benefit of the doubt. We've seen enough from him. And if he wants to retire, which I agree with you, I would not be surprised if he comes out and says, I'm done, then fine, do it. But I mean, it's still worth criticizing him given the, you know, how he's acted and what he's said on the record over the past few years. And the fact that he's left every team he's been on, you know, on a sour note. It's just the facts. And now he's starting off the first season he's healthy with his new team on a very sour note. It's as if he is intentionally trying to sabotage every relationship he has in the NBA and sabotage his reputation with fans. So yeah, maybe he has an issue. Let's have the Nets actually step up and do something about it. Or let's have people in his inner circle step up and do something about it. But just trying to excuse him at every turn, that doesn't help anything. It doesn't address the problem, and I think it's entirely unwarranted.
So there you go. The Kyrie Irving minute goes on for about five, but good rant levels. That was one of your better ones. Good job.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
All right, quick baseball thought before we wrap the show up. Can we get this thing on the road? I'm actually a little bit excited for baseball season. They're going to play 162 games. Sounds like they're going to try to get fans in the stands of all 30 ballparks, or at least 29. We'll see what happens with Toronto. But 29 of the 30 ballparks by the end of the year, like this is, it sounds like this baseball season could be a huge step in terms of sports getting back to normal. That being said, my team sucks right now because they don't have any players. They've lost a bunch of players. They haven't gained any players. A lot of other teams are in the same boat. We've got some big name free agents out there. Trevor Bauer kind of leading that pack that won't sign. I will say shout out to DJ LeMahieu, because he wanted to go back to the Yankees. The Yankees wanted him back. That was, you know, there wasn't expected to be a pursuit. It was just figure out the details and let's get this thing rolling. The details ended up being, per reports, that they're $25 million apart. So over the weekend, DJ LeMahieu calls his agent and says, hey, those teams that called early on, we told them no because I was going back to New York. See if they're still interested. Call the Red Sox. Call the Dodgers. Call the Mets. Now, is that a bargaining chip? Right. It's no coincidence he named some of the most financially viable teams in the sport. Is he just using this as a bargaining chip? Probably. But how fun would it be if the Red Sox swiped the Yankees' best hitter in free agency and a player they need, too, I think. Like, I want to get free agency going because I think it's going to be a good one once it gets going.
Yeah, I mean, this has kind of been the wave over the past few years. There's a real issue in the MLB with its free agency market and just how much it's fluctuated and how you have these big name athletes, whether it's, you know, Bryce Harper or whether it's JD Martinez right here in Boston, who have to wait a long time to get deals. And a lot of the times they're not they're very team friendly. They're not getting what they want. I think that's probably the issue here with DJ LeMahieu, who might not have come to grips with, you know, the fact that the MLB free agency market is not what it was 5, 6, 7 years ago, which is different, especially when you had an abbreviated season last year. But for the Red Sox, DJ LeMahieu is obviously an unbelievable hitter. One of the better hitters in the MLB, would be a great asset to any team that he joins. But it comes down to priorities. And when you look at the issues with the Red Sox last year, and I know I'm kind of beating a dead horse, it wasn't their lineup, it was their pitching rotation. And where I want to see them make moves is right there in their pitching rotation. I know Corey Kluber is going to be worked out, but you still have guys like Trevor Bauer, who they haven't really been in on, and I don't think he signed anywhere yet. If he has, that slipped past me.
we're recording, but calling it curse. So you
never that's very true. But there's a number of starters that they could look into, try to bring in, and relievers that they could take flyers on who are not going to be all that expensive. But there's been really no movement. I think the only consolation here is it's been a league-wide problem. It's not just the Red Sox. It seems like the Mets have been the one team to really make a splash. But yeah, I'd love the Red Sox to sign some big names, but on my list of priorities, DJ LeMahieu isn't even close to the top of it. So we'll see what happens. But we've seen them stranglehold themselves or pigeonhole themselves in the past by signing guys to big contracts and kind of not even considering how that's going to affect your team in the future, especially when you have an ownership that does not want to go over that luxury tax. So point being, I'm not all that confident that they'll make the moves necessary. I just think that LeMahieu would be a good sign for most teams, but not necessary for this one.
So I think that, you know, you mentioned the luxury tax there as to why they can't do right, why they can't have LeMahieu in pitching. The whole point of all of this, of trading Mookie Betts and sucking for 2 years and all of that, the whole point of getting under the, like, you don't need to stay under the luxury tax. It's just 1 year to reset it. This team should now be willing to spend. And I don't think LeMahieu, who fills a hole they desperately need at second base, and you're not going to fill it much better. Him and pitching shouldn't be an exclusive options. They should be able to do both. They should be able to pay both. This is a big market baseball team. They should be willing to spend. I don't think LeMahieu's realistic because I think this is just a ploy to negotiate with the Yankees. I don't think he actually plans on going anywhere else. We'll see if the Yankees call his bluff. But There's no reason the Red Sox can't set. Look, LeMahieu and Bauer, maybe that's a stretch. Those are that's the top position player free agent, the top pitching free agent. That's ballsy. LeMahieu and Jake Odorizzi? LeMahieu and Corey Kluber? Those should not be unrealistic combinations for the Boston Red Sox, for John Henry, who's trying to essentially buy the entire world of sports right now, right? Become a worldwide leading sports conglomerate. He should be able to pay DJ LeMahieu and Jake Odorizzi. You're under the luxury tax now. The whole point of trading Mookie Betts was it's a one-year reset to explode out of it, and we can start spending again, yada, yada, yada. Do it.
So what will Bobby and Michael Chavis, he's going to be a first base. He's not a second baseman. Bobby Dalbec, is he going to be your first baseman? I think there are question marks with the lineup, but I think those voids are fillable with the roster as is.
I mean, you can put Chavis at first base. That's all well and good. Like, I don't know. Chavis is what he is. He's going to hit 20 home runs and strike out every other at bat. I mean, that's fine, right? But you're the Boston Red Sox. Again, fine shouldn't be acceptable. You can go out and get the reigning reigning batting champion. Okay, he won the batting title last year. He had 364. I know it was only 50 games, but he had 364. And it's not like it was some fluke. He won the batting title before that too. It was the second one. He won three silver sluggers. That's like you get that guy. You plug that guy in, okay? And then you have Dalbec. You move Dalbec over to first base. Okay, and all of a sudden your infield is Dalbec, LeMahieu, Bogarts, and Devers. Whoa. Now we're talking. And maybe you teach Chavis to play in the outfield or something. Because you still need outfielders. Okay, maybe you figure that out. But that's an infield. There's movement there. That's an infield. That's what the Red Sox should be. Absolutely what the Red Sox should be. And look, how much longer are you going to have J.D. Martinez and one of those guys can slide into DH? Having too many good players is not a bad problem. I'm not really, they don't need to be the Celtics. They don't need to just kind of wait around for the kids to develop. That's not how baseball works when you're a big market team. You can go out, get a top hitter, and steal your opponent's best offensive player. Your chief rival's best offensive player. I think you'd do it.
And that would be sweet from the perspective of, you've had the Mets. You have outperformed the Yankees in free agency. They've outperformed all of the MLB in free agency so far this season and just the offseason with that trade, getting Carrasco and Lindor. And then you'd have the Red Sox taking away, one of the best hitters on the Yankees as well. That would be nice. It would be nice from a fan's perspective. But, it looks like $36 million they're under the luxury tax right now. I guess you can get LeMahieu and still get a decent starting pitcher. But I don't think you can get LeMahieu a decent starting pitcher and some bullpen help. I think you'd have to move some stuff around and it would just make things more convoluted. That's if they're not trying to go over the luxury tax, which, you know, judging by, you know, the past couple of years, it seems like a priority for them. So we'll see what happens. You know, if they get LeMahieu, it's a good sign. He's a great addition. It will bulk up their offense, and obviously he can perform. But I'd rather them put that money towards you know, pitching. I think they could keep their lineup as is right now and, you know, add two or three decent to very good pitchers, and that would suit him way better than getting LeMahieu and one good, decent to very good pitcher. So that's my take. I don't know, though.
I don't disagree. Well, I don't disagree if they can leave the lineup as it is. I think they need to shake up the outfield. I think trading Andrew Benintendi makes a ton of sense. I get what you're saying, though. I do. I would just say, why not both? The Red Sox should be in position to do both. They're the Boston Red Sox. It's John Henry. They should be in position to do both.
Yeah. And Benintendi's future is, you know, that's a big component. If they can move him,
I just think him and Verdugo are redundant. They're both left-handed hitting. Yeah. Spray the ball outfielders. Like Tony Maz wrote this on 985thesportshub.com yesterday. There's no reason to have both. They're the same player. You're selling yourself short. So we'll see what happens with that. All right. Long, long episode. So we're going to wrap it up here, but we'll have plenty more to talk about on the next show, of course. In the meantime, make sure you follow us on Twitter at Calling the Podcast and check us out online at clnsmedia.com under the podcast tab. Until the next one, for Alex Lebowitz, I'm Alex Barth. Thanks for listening.